Greetings and salutations, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Voices That Cook, where I am a voice actor, William Nunn, who likes to cook, and I talk to other voice actors who also like to cook. And today, I've got a very special guest on today, and that is my good sir, Kevin. Kevin, how are you today?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing? It's a great pleasure to be here.
I'm glad to have you. I am a bit recovered after a long day at work. So I am very much in a mindset of, yes, I am glad to be back in my booth again, do this show again. This is just a great show to be able to just meet awesome voice actors and talk about food and all sorts of other stuff. It's just been a really good show, and I hope all of you have been enjoying it so far as well. And if none of you have done so already, I'm just going to let you know, since it's been, as of this recording, it just came out yesterday. But if you have not gotten your copy of Dune on Blu-ray, I highly suggest doing so. So I'm just going to go ahead and just throw that out there, because I'm very happy about that. So
after following you for a while, you are very happy about Dune, and I'm going to say I have not seen it yet.
Yet
was the operative word, yes.
You should see it. But plus, I do think it's a movie all should see, because it is legitimately a really, really good movie. And I'm not just saying that because I'm a huge Dune fan. Like, it legitimately is a really good movie. And I can't wait for part two. But that's enough about me and my over-enthusiasm of the world of Frank Herbert and Denis Villeneuve's amazing adaptation of it. I am here to talk to you, good sir. So, why don't we'll call it begin part two of this episode, if you will. We'll call that part one, where I gush about Dune again. What can you tell us about your origins in the voice acting world? What got you started?
Got me started. I'll have to say my first foray back in radio, back when I was in college. I worked in radio as an intern, so they put me through hell, as most companies for interns do. But it was for entertainment purposes, and I loved it. But I got started in doing the intern is our local radio would have contests for people to come in and have competitions with coworkers, family members, etc., for fun, all for fun, and for humiliation at the end. I unfortunately lost, ended up getting a couple pies in the face for humiliation, but I loved the experience so much of being on the air that I basically begged them to work there, and they gave me an internship for the morning show.
Nice.
It was quite fun. Getting the inner workings of radio, but then also being the intern, they would put me through ridiculous bits for the show. You know, it'd be one of the coldest days of the year. It's a negative 15 actual temperature, Fahrenheit, that is. A wind chill of probably negative 30. I'm outside reading this fake barometer just until they call on me to be on the air. So I'm sitting out in the cold for, 15, 20, 30 minutes at a time. Ooh. Just waiting for them to say, hey, how's the weather out there? It's cold. And then I'd come back in.
It is. But It that sounds like you're almost in like an Animal House situation.
It almost was. It was almost like the hazing or pledging of eternity,
mm-hmm.
which is what it was. Being there, I always, I wanted an on-air personality, and they eventually gave me one. It was the overpronunciation of my birth last name. And then one bit they had, they were going to a college campus for a National Safe Sex Week.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, they didn't tell me any of this. They're on there like, oh, yeah, we're going to be at College XYZ, tomorrow, blah, blah, blah. And we're going to have our morning show staff there. They named them off. And they're like, our morning show mascot. And they're like, Kevin Condom is going to be there handing out, safe sex devices, condoms to all the students for Safe Sex Week, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just sitting there going, what, really? But little did I know, they actually had a full-blown condom costume that I actually
what?
Wore. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So I'm running around this college campus with a bag full of condoms, dressed as a giant condom. It was probably one of the most embarrassing times of my life. The best part was nobody could tell who I was underneath that big rubber mask I had on.
I for the last 10 seconds, I had my jaw open. Just so y'all have a visual of my reaction to that part of the story.
It was probably the same visual that my parents had when I came home and they're like, you were what?
Yeah, I would say the same.
Yeah. So, you know, from that point on, I was known as on the radio as Kevin Condom. They would bring me out for various, you know, stunts, birthday parties and wedding receptions. You know, I'm just crashing them wearing this big rubber suit, carrying a bag full of condoms.
Wow.
So me, even after all of that, I still wanted to go into radio and then eventually into voiceover.
Holy shit. I can't help but think, like, you could go through some pretty hectic stuff and just think to yourself, well, hey, at least I don't have to put a condom over my body.
Right, exactly. And nope, I got a big old rubber suit. I'm pulling it down. Yeah.
So after going through the era of Kevin Condom, what happened next? What got you out of that?
I took some time off radio, pursued my career in IT, and probably, what was it, about 10 to 15 years ago, one of the colleges was doing a intro to voiceover course. I happened to look at it, I was like, I've always wanted to get back into radio. What about voiceover? People have always told me I've had a great, you know, radio voice, deep baritone voice. So I went ahead and I took the class, loved what I did, signed up for more classes. That just continued to steamroll, you know, building up as I'm going downhill. And it's just like, this is fantastic. So then I just started taking classes for the next, you know, several years of voiceover and learning how to produce audio in the back end. And here I am today.
Fantastic, dude. So now that you've gotten to be able to do all that, like, cause I took a quick glance at your website before we started and I saw that you had gotten to do some commercial work, some narration work. And I thought that was really cool. What do you like most about what you've been doing with voiceover so far?
I'll have to say I love the behind the scenes technical aspect of the audio production more. Over the last several years, things have been up and down with everything in the world today. I happen to take a good look back at my career trajectory, and it's like, you know, I spend more time tweaking and fiddling it with my auditions that I'm submitting that a lot of times they've like closed the audition. They're no longer taking submissions to where I just wasted the time tweaking the audio so it sounded the best. So I realized that I like doing that more versus being in front of the mic. I still love being in front of the mic, but I think just my technical background likes the back end a little bit more to make it sound as best as it can be.
That's much appreciated. And what do you think with that experience, has that not only helped you with your own voice acting experiences and making yourself sound better, but also like what would you say would be, especially for anyone who might be listening and they're kind of trying to figure out how to make themselves sound better for, let's say, auditions or something they've gotten a gig for. What are some major things you learned that you're like, wow, I wish I knew this when I was younger?
I'll have to say the thing that I wish I knew back then are mouth clicks. Everybody has them. Everybody has dry mouth. I would spend so much time trying to remove every last bit for an audition for a job I may or may not get, to where I would just make it sound the best I can, turn it in, but still practice to remove every single little mouth tick or click just for your own knowledge for later on. Plus, that helps you speed up your editing process, your post-production, which then allows you for future to remove as many, if not all of them, for auditions as you can.
I agree with you there. I remember even with some of my earlier recordings back when I didn't even audition, I was just doing like Rick and Morty stuff, and I would just start to notice Rick and Morty fan-made audio dramas. I should clarify, I did not work on Rick and Morty per se, the official thing. Oh, I wish you did though.
Shut up, Morty. They've got Justin Roiland up there, so just don't worry about it.
Oh, well, I mean, it's a multiverse and all, you never know.
Shut up, Morty, let him continue the show.
It's okay. I appreciate it. But there were, you know, when you first start out, there's some things you start to notice over time, the more you record. And then I would start to get to where I'm like, crap, I had a mouth click there. I had a weird sort of sound going on there and all this other stuff that just goes from like, oh, that's there to I can now hear every single person whenever they just naturally do it.
Oh, yes.
It's become a curse. A curse where I keep wanting to tell so many people, including my parents, please hydrate. Please hydrate. Please hydrate.
And the thing is, even though I do hydrate quite a bit, that's also a curse. Overhydration is another problem. So it's that fine line. And I just learned to, okay, I'm going to have mouth clicks during my takes. Let's do what I can to reduce the number that I have so the editing process, post-production, cleaning up can be as simple as possible.
There are three things I've definitely noticed that have helped me with that. There's some vocal exercises and warm-ups that I've done that I was taught by my friend Felicia, who's actually been on the show before. It's kind of like this almost yawning sort of singing thing that allows you to kind of open up your mouth and your jaw to do this sort of And if it makes you yawn or makes you feel like you need to spit, then it is allowing your mouth to open up some and give it some flexibility to allow for your mouth to be able to, I like to think of the term as play more or at least do more. And by doing that, it's like there's less mouth clicks. And then there's also golden throat lozenges or any good lozenge that has natural herbs to it that are very good at making sure your mouth is good, especially if you're going to be doing really powerful, tough voices for a while. Those will get rid of mouth clicks too. And also water, just a good amount of water, especially smart water with electrolytes, which makes the body feel good too. Those three things are mainly the main things I think about when I want to just make sure I'm about as ready to go for something without mouth clicks as possible. But thank goodness things like RX-7 elements or RX-8 elements, depending on what you have available, that has a de-click function, and I love it so much.
Yep. I actually like ginger water, you know, some like warm, hot ginger water.
Ooh, I haven't thought about that.
Oh yeah, that's one of the things that have helped me the most. I've tried the sour apples, a lot of water. You know, it's just everything. I'm just cursed with a dry mouth, constantly dry mouth.
I feel like I would be able to say I can kind of tell, but with what I'm editing in post, it might not be as noticeable. So it's almost like, should I say that on the recording or should it be kept in? I may keep it in because then you might go, well, I don't hear a dry mouth. It's because that's the beauty of what technology we have now.
Which, exactly.
Like, I can't imagine what it would be like to do voice acting 20 years ago where like you're always going to a studio and you can't really do a lot at home unless you have something available like a studio you've built yourself. Whereas now we've got, I mean, I'm in an attic with quilts and pillows right now and I sound better here than I did just sitting right outside my door. But I know obviously people who have like closets and all this amazing stuff and these acoustic blankets that cover them up with PVC pipes, keeping them high enough to make sure that they are, you know, they've got room to move their hands around and such, and they sound like they're in a fucking studio. And it's whatever can work well for you from a sound treatment standpoint and keep it all contained, it's a great feeling to have that boost to you there for your sound quality. And I just feel like if I were trying to do this 20 years ago, I probably would not have known what I was doing. I would have probably tried to get an even more expensive microphone without worrying about how everything's going to sound as far as sound treatment would be concerned. And whenever I move, I will definitely be researching a lot more into sound treatment type such because I will be in a different spot. an apartment, probably. So that's something else to consider. But yeah, there's definitely, I feel like I have picked a good time for myself to be doing what I'm doing now, because hell, 20 years ago, I would have been
right. But now, I said you have a closet, you have a blanket you can throw over yourself to record. I've seen people record in their cars, you know, just someplace that's quiet. And you know, I started out with a cardboard box with some blankets stuffed in it and my microphone in there just to help absorb some sound.
I actually helped a friend of mine who's a model record something that was in her car. Like, I've done that once, and that was actually, I think it might have been her idea. I don't know if it was my idea. It might have been her idea. But there was one thing I got to do for her, which was for like this international modeling competition where she I still smell Sicilian pizza from that burp. We'll have to talk about that later. I had my friend Rachel. She was at a international modeling competition. I can't think of what it was off the top of my head. It might have been like Glow World or something. And she was all the way out in Indonesia, and she needed some sort of presentation video sort of thing to be able to have play whenever she would be walking down the runway and such. And I will probably post this in the description below for y'all to see it. But keep in mind, she was recording from like her cell phone. She didn't have a microphone on her because this was like one of those, I had no idea I needed to have this. William, could you make this for me as soon as possible, please? And where she was, it was like morning, afternoon, something like that. By the time I had gotten that message from her, it was almost midnight.
Wow.
I was getting ready to go to sleep, and I got that message, and she was begging me to help her, and I just, all right, I'll do it. And I didn't think the recording was great, but I did it with the best that I could do. And I still feel like if this would have been many years prior, I don't know if it would have come out as good as it did. But I just remember just being like a zombie, just autopiloting through editing this thing and putting it together and sending it out to her. And a week, maybe 2 weeks later, I found out that she had won the competition.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Wow.
There's a lot of times where, especially lately, where I think to myself, it's good that I got into this at the time that I did rather than earlier, because stuff leads into it. And you never know when that's going to be beneficial to you at a particular time. And sure enough.
Wow. Fantastic.
I don't think I've ever shared that story on any of my shows before. Yeah, it's a new one. So yeah, y'all will have to check out that video. I'll have it below in the description. It's short. But yeah, I did all of that within like 3 or 4 hours with very sleepy mindset.
I'm definitely going to check that out.
I'll send it to you after we finish recording.
Cool.
Oh man. Have you ever done anything as far as like recording wise where you were just like barely awake and yet you somehow, you know, you maybe go back and listen to it and go, I did that?
There's been a couple I've done that, like midnight, 1 a.m., where it's like, oh, I'm just going to record one more. You know, barely awake, I record it, and then it's like, I'll edit it tomorrow morning. I'm just super tired. I go to bed, get up the next morning, and I've had recordings that were either, oh my God, I actually recorded that? And then some were like, holy crap, how do I sound so good? So I've had both sides of that coin.
There are times where I hear people say that the stuff that they book are the ones that just, they kind of almost go like, whatever, I'll record and get it done, all good. And then all of a sudden, it's like, wait a minute, that's the one I snag?
Yeah, exactly. And I've had a lot like that to where I'm just in the booth goofing around, you know, putting on funny, you know, voices, as people call it, trying to do impersonations and recording auditions. And yet sometimes those are my best auditions. One, I'm just having fun in the booth. I'm not getting in my own head trying to think about where the script is going, what the character is. I'm just having fun being free. So any newbies out there, have fun in the booth. Don't get stuck in your own way.
That's exactly how I felt last night when I was working on, I can't talk about it just yet. I don't know what all the specifics are for what I can say, but it was a narration project. And I got the whole short story recorded within probably 2 to 3 hours with some breaks in between and such. And I remember starting off just reading it and not performing it. And when I thought, don't read it, just perform it, it all clicked. It all just clicked.
Yeah.
It sometimes it can be changing a word of how you perceive something, and it just makes you go, I understand how to do this better. I understand how to do this. Because there's times where we forget, where we think maybe the way we've been doing it is wrong. Maybe we should try it this way. But always, always, always let your booth be a place to play. Let it be a place to create. Let it be a place to perform. And that's where I've been having a lot of fun with that. And it just makes me really excited for whenever I audition now. I'm just going to think to myself, you're not auditioning, you're performing. And if you just go in and do that and they hear it, it's like, well, I hope they liked my performance. Rather than, because it feels a lot less stressful when you think about it like that. Because
yes, it does. It does. I would go in, I would get in my own head, I would get all hot, sweaty in the booth, which the booth is pretty damn hot to begin with. But I would just get all nervous. It's like, wait a minute, this should be fun. I should be having fun with this. And once I started having more fun and loosening up and playing in the booth, my reads / performances became more natural and they sounded so much better. There's more life into the recording.
Yes. It makes me really excited for the auditions I'm going to do after dinner tonight, because I really want to perform tonight. That feels so much more fun to me than just saying, I'm going to audition.
Right.
Like, no. Just you're performing. That's way more fun.
Right. It's kind of like I have to go to work, or I'm working on a puzzle. Well, you're not really working on a puzzle. You're having fun putting a puzzle together. You're puzzling. You know, it's all about the words that we choose to use.
This is true. This is very, very true. And if I had any other questions I'd like to ask as far as that is concerned, do you have a favorite role you've ever done?
Oh, I haven't had that favorite role yet. I'm one of the people who I will know it when I see it or feel it. I'm more of an energetic person. I go off of the energy. So I haven't had that feeling quite yet, but I know it's out there and I know it's coming soon.
Well, my favorite is definitely someone that I have created personally. And those of you who have listened to the show for a while now, you probably know who I'm about to reference. The lovely, cheerful, optimistic, tragic dragonborn bard, Odysseus Claw, who is someone I've been playing since Dungeons & Dragons, and I have a whole show built around him, One Shots D&D Character Podcast, and I'm going to be starting season 2 with him very soon, which...
Oh, fantastic.
That's the plan right now. As of this recording, probably by the time this episode's out, season 2 may drop by then. But I wish before recently, where I had a little bit of a confidence downward spiral sort of thing, which sometimes happens, you will go through that at some point in your acting experience. You will go through a point of where you're like, I don't feel good enough. And you are. Just go do something that makes you happy. Play Spider-Man on PS4 if you have one, and just go enjoy yourself, please. and then come back and play, perform. Don't treat it like you're making it too hard on yourself. But with Odysseus, it never feels too hard. It never feels too difficult because he's such a blast to play, and he's such a joyful character to embody. Even when he's sad, even when he's going through his, oh no, I can't believe that a creature ended up eating off my tacos. That was fun. He's such a delightful person, and I look forward to playing him again. And I told myself after season one was over with and wrapped up and I had sent out the last episode, I did not want to come back to season two until I started missing him, like really missing him.
Okay.
Because I had literally been doing one shots since it had been like a 13-month endeavor. So I really wanted to give myself a legit break, which I feel like I've mostly done. I'm very close. I feel like I'm very close to where I'm legit missing Odysseus Claw right now. So when I know, I'm like, I want to play him again. I really, really do, which I'm obviously very happy to play him. But it felt good to step away and create some new characters for other campaigns that I'm in and try out different stuff with other individual projects and such. In fact, I've even got a D&D character in another campaign who is a high elf named Cobra, who is pretty much like, what if a high elf were Rambo or Geralt? Just a very, I can't believe that you guys are talking about Odysseus Claw. You know he uses magic with his loot, right? I don't. I use my muscles and my senses. Because magic was a whole fucked up thing 100 years ago where I'm from. Yeah. I'm Cobra. Nice to, well, I would say it's nice to meet you, but I'm not nice. And, oh man, I'm just so excited to see what adventures Odysseus Claw will be going through this year. So now
I'm only partway through season one of your one shots. I'm looking forward to getting back into that.
Oh yes. Oh,
I really
yes.
enjoyed what I've listened to so far.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so glad you have. Out of curiosity, how far did you get?
I recently just started, so I'm on episode two.
Oh goody. So, oh goody.
Yes, I'm not very far in.
I will be having her back on the show, Carla DePriest, which, God, I need to ask her about getting on the show because she's a wonderful Shakespearean teacher. So if you ever want to learn Shakespeare or if you want to relearn it for any reason, I highly recommend her. Plus, she's a very sweet person. And she was not only sick, or just, oh my God, you're going to really enjoy the David Miscavige audio stage play, because she's in that too, as well as a lot of my friends. And yeah, when you get to that point, you let me know, including all of you listening to this show
now.
Of course. All of you let me know, because David Miscavige audio stage play is probably my favorite project I've put together so far that is out. That is online for people to hear. Because that one is really stupid, really fun, and absurd, but I really loved putting together a stage play rendition of one of my other D&D characters, David Miscavige's backstory, and seeing how that play crumbles during opening night. That was extremely fun. So for those of you who don't know David Miscavige, he's a little fat gnome who worships Cthulhu. That's one of his main things. And he's all,
okay.
Oy ye, mighty Cthulhu, praise ye for all his gloriousness and awesomeness and fantasticness, for then he will come forth and bring all of us to glorious madness and...
Oh, yeah, he'll actually fall asleep whenever he worships the Great Dreamer. That just happens all the time.
So yeah, that was a really fun idea that I can't believe turned into what it ended up being, which that was a long endeavor too. That was about 11 months.
Wow.
Going
good for you.
Going from idea to it coming out was it definitely took a while for sure, but all good things come to those who wait. All good things come to those who spend a lot of time getting something done when they have the time to do so.
And then sometimes the all good things are the fun projects you do on the side that take months and months and months to do.
Yes, yes. And,
you know, it may never see the light of day, but you enjoyed the hell out of working on it. I know I have in some of my projects.
Mm. And All Good Things is also the name of the season finale, series finale of the Star Trek The Next Generation.
Ah.
Had to bring it back to Picard. Shout out to John Christie, where we had a really good episode where we talked about Patrick Stewart and Liam O'Brien and other foods and such. Which, no, Patrick Stewart and Liam O'Brien are not foods. They are actors. If you want to talk about food, though, I am totally down to talk about that with you, good sir.
Or actors. It doesn't matter. You just love talking.
I do, too.
As we do in the voiceover world.
Yes. I usually joke that if I slip up on a word, I just say, we're voice actors. We can't talk. Or we're voice actors. We can't read if we really flub up on a script. That can be really
funny. Oh, right.
But you know what? We'll go back to Patrick Stewart and Liam O'Brien and actors and all that shit, because I do really want to ask you, what got you started on cooking?
Wow. I'll have to say I've always, even from a young age, I was a very picky eater. So I always liked particular things, certain things. And growing up way back in the like 80s, 70s, 80s, and that, you know, food wasn't that great. But I would learn to adapt and still be a picky eater. And then I would start experimenting with things that I tried at a restaurant, or I just wanted to try different things. And I really didn't know what I was doing. So with all my trying, I would take family recipes that we'd have and kind of tweak them for my style. And then I discovered Alton Brown on the Food Network, who is able to teach things or teach basic how to cook or how to make something in very easy to understand words. So I just started to get more into the science of the food, how it works. The first thing I created that was probably dynamite was my first cup of coffee.
Nice.
Brewed to specifications. It was freaking delicious. So from there, I would just pick one food and then just cook it over and over and over and over again, tweaking it to where I could duplicate a taste I liked multiple times. And then I would move on to the next food. So being a healthy eater, a healthy lifestyle, I always wanted healthy versions of various food items. So I would try to recreate what I ate in a restaurant, but in a healthy manner, and then try to, if I liked the flavor of something, I would just try to enhance it with more fresh herbs, spices, various sauces, various. I went from a soy sauce to a coconut amino, and just for various different flavors that I liked. So I find flavors I liked and try to mix and match them.
Hmm. I appreciate the creative endeavor that you went on with this.
I found that a lot of my creativity comes out in the kitchen, whether it's me making a Thai basil and chicken, homemade marinara sauce, fresh bread, cookies, roasted chicken, baked items. I learned to be creative because, for one, it kind of calms me down and brings me back into what I'm focusing on right now. Mm-hmm. It takes everything else in the world that I'm experiencing. Nope, I need to make this recipe. I need to follow the instructions, the ingredients. Otherwise, it's not going to turn out the way I want it to.
I concur. And I definitely feel that way a lot when I make food at home. I have not gotten to the point of where I would be willing to make something over and over again within like a constant sort of thing like that, because I feel like that would annoy the shit out of my parents, who I'm currently living with. But I know one meal that they would be fine with me making over and over again, because I would do it too, is minestrone soup, which I've talked about on the show quite regularly at this point. But it is a very, very, very delicious, but also makes me feel good meal. So it's definitely one of my, I would say probably one of the healthier foods I do.
Okay.
I also like to do, Chicken thighs with red potatoes and carrots mixed with chicken broth and a lot of seasonings. Ooh. Like parsley and such, and
okay,
salt, pepper. I can't think of what the others were. Maybe oregano and thyme. I'm not sure, but it kind of turns into this almost like chicken. I wouldn't call it gumbo, but it's so good.
And it sounds delicious.
You feel so good while eating it too.
Oh my gosh.
The main thing to do is to let the chicken and not the chicken, the potatoes and carrots, if you want, you can go ahead and start the cooking process with them on a skillet first, just to make sure that they are, okay, you know, getting some flavor and some heat to them. And then you can have them sit in the oven for probably an hour and a half, 2 hours, somewhere around there. And then you can either, and this is what I really love about chicken thighs, you can either go ahead and sear them on a skillet and then put them in the oven with everything else, or you could literally just, put butter or oil on top of them and then let them sit in the oven and they'll cook that way too. You can go either way. I do think they are better when you sear them first and then put them in the oven, but they get those juices to mix with the broth that you're going to add in.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where I'm like, yeah, chicken thighs all the way. Even though I love me some chicken breasts, thighs are my favorite chicken to do anything with, especially fried chicken.
Oh, I used to roast chicken. I would actually, as I'm picking it off the bone, just the thighs, just in my mouth directly. I'm like, these are mine. These are just so good.
I'm already watering in my mouth thinking about it. But there's also sometimes where I'll eat something that's from a restaurant and think to myself, I've got to make that, or I need to do it a bit more like how they do it, because maybe I've already made it before. My Roman pizzas are kind of, very, very, very kind of similar to some Sicilian pizzas I had for lunch today. They're the more...
Is that more of the thick crust pizza?
The thick, square-shaped pizzas. Okay. Or more rectangular, I would probably say.
Right, yeah.
They're not the circular ones, and they have with the ones I've done, at least the second one felt a lot closer to what I had to eat today. The first time I did it, I kind of messed up a little, but it still ended up being surprisingly good. The third time I did it, the crust kind of turned out to be a bit like a biscuit, if you will.
Crusts are hard to do.
They are. And one thing I did not take into consideration with my third attempt was the room temperature, because that can affect things. And I didn't realize that. I kept thinking, okay, where I'm in the kitchen, so I just do it like I did before and be fine. No, this is why it's better to do it like around the afternoon rather than like 10 p.m. at night. But with what they were doing, I noticed like how, you know, sometimes you touch bread and it doesn't feel hard. It feels more soft. It feels like you can kind of, you can bite into it. There's a crunch, but there's a nice softness to it.
Yes.
I want that with my pizzas. And the second time I made my Roman pizza, it was crunchy. It had a slight softness to it. It was absurdly flavorful because I added garlic to my flour mixture.
Ooh.
Because I wanted essentially garlic bread, Roman pizza. I thought that sounded like a good idea.
Right.
But when you look upside down, it's like, this looks very much like what I would expect to see as far as like that kind of light brown tan color that looks like it could be a really nice light wood, and you knock into it and it feels actually nice in comparison to wood. What you would usually see when you go and pick up a pizza, it's like, this has the color. This has the color.
Right.
I'm so happy about this. And I had the Sicilian pizza today. I'm like, this has the same color that I had with the second pizza that I made, but the way the bread is handled is different. And I really want to nail that. And with that new drive I have, it's like, I'm going to be looking up all sorts of Roman and Sicilian. Well, I looked up a lot of Roman pizza recipes, but Sicilian pizzas I will look up too, even though they're similar, but there are different ways to handle it, go about it. You can have it in the fridge for a certain amount of time or longer or whatever, depending on what you do. And I don't have like a bread maker or mixer or whatever. I would have to knead it with my hands or a spoon or something.
Old school. Yep. Yeah.
Which so very little. So are you
a visual cooker? Do you cook by how something's going to look or by how it's going to taste?
How it's going to look usually.
That's kind of how I am too. People are like, but how do you know if it tastes well? I'm like, if it looks as good as I think it's going to, it's going to taste even better. So all of my cooking, I always want it to look a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
Because the flavor is going to come.
The flavor will come. The flavor will come. I should mention, while I was at the pizza place today, because I've seen this happen a lot with YouTube pizza recipes, they actually had San Marzano tomatoes over there. And I'm like, okay, I will definitely be using San Marzano tomatoes next time I make my pizza. Because that was, the sauce was incredible, the cheese was incredible, and the pepperonis were huge. I love that they were so big. I have like really small ones at home, but they are huge. It's like, I got to find out where these bigger ones are. I'm in a small town though, so there's a small chance I'll actually find some here unless I, I'm going out of town tomorrow, but it's for the purposes of seeing the new Scream movie. So,
okay. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that's going to be.
So probably not going to be able to grocery shop. At least I don't feel like grocery shopping after seeing a movie that I'm actually quite excited to see. Which, fun fact for those of you who like horror movies, especially if you heard my episode with Melissa Medina, was it last year? Yeah, it was last year. I became hooked on Scream. So I was very much interested in this new one. And I'm really happy that the reviews are very positive right now. So I'm excited to go see it. Very, very excited. Especially since this will be my first time seeing Scream on the big screen. I've never...
Oh, wow.
Never seen a Scream movie on the big screen before. Like, I literally rented... the first three Scream movies on Amazon when I started watching them, because I was in a horror movie Halloween mood for Halloween season at that point. And then Scream 4 was streaming on Hulu at the time. And after I had finished going through those, I got all four of them on Blu-ray because I love them so much.
Oh, it's fantastic.
And I just think they're very clever and fun movies, and well, especially 1 and 2. 4, I was quite surprised by. 3 is definitely the weakest, but it still has some really good enjoyment to it, and it ties up some things pretty well. It even has one of the weirdest cameos I've ever seen in a movie.
And 4 or 3?
3.
Trying to think. I haven't seen those since they originally came out, so it's been a while.
It was two characters that cameoed, and they technically cameoed in a spoofy sort of thing that Wes Craven was doing.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just go ahead and blurt it. It was Jay and Silent Bob that pop up in Scream 3.
Oh, okay.
Which was like, wait a minute. What the fuck are Jay and Silent Bob doing here? And then I remembered, like, oh yeah, they were in that Wes Craven not Scream movie when they were invading Hollywood.
Right, yes.
So that's where it was like, they did that, and then they pop up in Scream 3. I'm just like, that's so strange. I never knew that Jay and Silent Bob were in Scream 3. Because I was a big fan of the movies that took place in that universe Kevin Smith created back when I was in college.
The View Askew universe?
Yes, yes. So I was very much shocked to see Jay and Silent Bob in something I had not seen before at that point. I had even
seen... Oh, that's awesome.
It was so strange. So I was like, wow, that's... Is Clerks 2 still out there on Blu-ray, or is it just on DVD still?
I'm waiting for Clerks 3.
I am too, especially since I was actually quite surprised by how much I enjoyed the Jane Silent Bob reboot that came out.
I was impressed by that.
It was fun.
It was. It was very fun. I was very impressed. I'm like, okay, it's a good, honest to God comedy from Kevin Smith again, which is fantastic. So I'm looking forward to his next one he does.
Mm-hmm. And I'm also just curious to see how the relationship with those characters will go, being so many years later, especially when I thought Clerks 2 was such a good wrap up for where all that went.
Exactly.
So I'm like, what can you do from there? And I'll be the first to say, I enjoyed the first half of his Masters of the Universe animated series. I really did.
Okay.
Second half, not as much, but there were still some really awesome bits. So it's like he's still got some good stuff up his sleeve for sure. So I am willing to see what happens there, but I still think my favorite story he has ever told was his story about when he was working on that Superman movie Nick Cage was going to be in.
Okay, I remember the tidbits. That was one. Was that the one that was supposed to be directed by Tim Burton?
Yes.
Okay.
For those that don't know, very short summary. I will have a video for this in the description just so y'all can see the whole thing. But whenever people ask me, what's your favorite Hollywood story? Because I grew up being really into movies and all that sort of stuff. So there's always some behind the scenes stories that I find to be entertaining for all sorts of media. But movies especially, because there's just some really strange stuff that happens that never sees the light of day or anything like that. And with Kevin Smith talking about his experience with working on a Superman movie, especially after he had done Chasing Amy and Mallrats, which Mallrats had like a kryptonite condom reference, going back to condoms over here. He was definitely very interested in what they were going to do and wanted to bring his own continuation of the narrative and such and all that. And then just his whole weird experiences with John Peters, who was a producer on Batman. Just imagining someone like Kevin Smith literally telling John Peters everything in his very extensive 80-page outline, which an outline is supposed to be like maybe a few pages long, but he wrote like 80 pages. And John Peters wanted him to read the whole thing, and he has his hands just in front of his face so that what Kevin would read to him, in John Peters' mind's eye, he's looking at what Kevin is telling him as if he's looking at a little screen. It's just really interesting to hear, and then hearing the back and forth between them about like how should this go, what are some things that Superman should or should not have. Like, I can't imagine Superman without a cape.
Wow.
That's what John Peters wanted to have. Like, no cape. But he should have a giant spider at the end of the movie. And
oh, right. That giant spider went into Wild Wild West.
Yes. That's when you know the story is true. That, because it seems so unbelievable until you get to that point and you find out John Peters worked on the movie. And if you've seen the movie, not only the giant spider, but what weird bullshit Kevin Branagh is going through in that movie with the weird technology, steampunk stuff that's going on.
The steampunk, yeah.
He's going through like, it's like Brainiac. It's like a steampunk Brainiac.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, what the fuck? I was not expecting to go on this tangent today with Voices That Cook. I have never thought to myself until this very moment, like, what if I ever do something in my career where I go, well, that role happened. I got to be a steampunk.
It's all part of the journey.
I got to be a steampunk Brainiac for a Wild West movie that had a giant spider in it.
a giant steampunk spider at the end.
Yes, yes, which I'm sure was fun to do. I'm sure it was fun to do on set. But, you know, part of the job, all that sort of stuff, I get it. You learn, you meet people, and that's the thing I always remind myself. It's like, it may not have been a good movie, but people met other people, got to do stuff with other people, and it led to probably an opportunity or two. It's fine.
Exactly. And if you learn something on that movie, whether it was, hey, I love doing this, or I never want to do this again, you've learned something.
Indeed.
You know, even with bad experiences, you're going to learn from that bad experience.
You know, I learned something today. Sorry, I can't do a good Stan Marshall impression. No, Stan Marsh. Sorry, Stan Marsh. South Park. God, I haven't watched South Park in
a while. I didn't even know his last name. I just knew him as Stan.
Well, I remembered that his last name was Marsh because of Randy. Randy Marsh.
Okay.
Who's his dad, and is probably my favorite character in the show because he's such a goofy, idiot, dumbass. But there's episodes where he is endearing, and there's episodes where he's not endearing. But the ones where he is just great. And I really particularly love, and we're going to bring this all back to Patrick Stewart. Stan was wanting to join a boy band with Kyle and Cartman, and I think Kenny was with it too, before he gets eaten by rats.
Poor Kenny.
You bastards. And Randy really did not want him to be in a boy band because of his own musical experiences back then that were really bad for him. And when Randy loses it, he is yelling, "No! No!" He just smacks into like the glass of like a some furniture in the house. But instead of it being Randy yelling, it's Patrick Stewart yelling when he's going ballistic in Star Trek First Contact. They use the exact audio from that movie for that moment.
That's fantastic.
Yes. If you guys have heard my episode of John Christie, I think we talked about it. In case we didn't, you guys need... I'm going to put that in the description, too. That's going in there, too. Future William, you've got to put that in there. Because that's...
I was going to say, hope you're taking
notes.
That's
comedy gold right there. To have that outburst be overdubbed by Patrick Stewart in First Contact.
That is fantastic.
I love shit like that.
That reminds me of when Toy Story came out to sell Tom Hanks on the role of Woody. They animated the scene from Turner and Hooch, where Hooch is chewing on the car's mm-hmm. headrest. And Tom Hanks comes out and starts yelling at Hooch. They basically animated that with Woody, but the dialogue from Turner and Hooch. It was amazing.
I never knew that. That's awesome.
Yes. I'll see if I can find that and I'll send
it
to you.
That'll be in the description too. And if it's not there, we didn't find it. Just so you go like, hey, where did it go? Or you could punt it down yourself. There's Google.
Only if there's a place to go on the interwebs to search for something.
You can go to the Google, but we like to be nice and make it available to you just when you scroll down. I don't know why. That just made me feel exhausted randomly.
Sometimes doing voices does that to me as well. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm exhausted. Whether it's just doing the voice or getting in the mental headspace.
The mental headspace, yes.
To keep up. Yes.
I don't know how that happens, where you almost kind of wonder, like, do I need to be like in theater where I just rehearse it for 6 months and then all of a sudden I'm ready for it, and by the time we're done, it's like, I could do that again, which I've only been like that with one character that I've done in theater, and that person was very much like me, minus a few things. Nerdy Delight, who likes to do silly voices, Calvin Anderson from The Cast List. Shout out to that. But that's definitely a headspace thing, is something that I feel like I would almost want to train more on to get myself more used to it. But then I feel like, would I either lose myself, or would people think I'm crazy, or would I just be way too focused on one particular approach and not just more of, because with acting, it's not so much, you know, you're just putting on a voice. It's just you're being who you are in a different context. And that's,
right.
That's always the key thing with a natural approach that I've learned from classes and such is just you've got to treat it like you're what would you do in this situation and how would you react? And because of what kind of character you are, that could change up your voice, that could change up your age, that could change up your height, your weight, whatever. But it's still you. So what can you bring? And there's just some things that you're going to be able to do better than others, and some may do better than you. It just, it's whatever. Maybe one day you get to be a capeless Superman, for all we know, or a giant spider. That would be cool to play a giant spider.
It would kind of be like Tamatoa from
there,
Moana.
There you go.
Your giant crab.
I still need to. I've been meaning to rewatch Moana for a long time. It has been so long since I've seen Moana and The Hunchback of Notre Dame, which people keep telling me over and over again it holds up so well.
I have not seen that. I remember seeing it maybe one time back in the day when it was first released. I don't think I've seen
last
it
time
since.
I
completely
last
forgot
time
about
I saw
that.
It was on VHS.
Wow.
Long, long time. And with it being such a long time, I remember that there was a last question to ask on this Voices That Cook show. Kevin, the most valiant and gracious guest, may I ask thee, what is your favorite recipe?
Wow, I will have to... Are you good now?
I just had to de-age.
Oh, I could see that doing the old DH thing. Oh wait,
of
I just
course,
went the other
man.
Way. I just olded I know, myself. I aged
I
myself.
More like I'm just really tired. What is your favorite part of
Okay. That was creepy.
My that was an odd little rant. My favorite recipe. I actually have a few, but I'm going to say this one. I have a cookie I make. It's a pretty damn healthy cookie that I spent years creating the recipe on. And to be honest, I created this recipe based on people's feedback. I have never had this cookie at all, but people tell me it is one of the most delicious cookies they have ever had. So with that, I actually have had people request to buy them. So in the meantime, I'm working on a website, domain name out there, and I'm going to start selling my brand or my line of baked goods online. Mm. But I have to say my favorite recipe that I make for that I eat would probably be a pad thai with basil.
Ooh.
Like a chicken pad thai with basil. The sauce I make is out
of
this world.
So what exactly is a pad thai? I've never had one before.
A pad thai is, a lot of people, it's a staple Thai dish. It's kind of like Thai spaghetti. You can have it with chicken, beef, fish, shrimp. I prefer mine with chicken. And it has, it's like, there's like a basil soy sauce. I make all mine from scratch, from hand. So I may not get all the proper ingredients in it, but I spice it up with a little habanero pepper. The key to mine is I use coconut aminos instead of soy sauce. So it's basically made out of coconut nectar, which is pretty doggone good.
Wow.
And then a fresh basil at the end to like just have it like wilt a little bit in the sauce and the heat as you put it on the plate. All the fresh aromas, yum.
That sounds really good.
That's one of the things I would make almost daily just because I wanted to get it to A, look right, B, get it to taste as delicious as it looks. So I would spend weeks on making it, tweaking the variation, trying different bases for the sauce. I ended up with a low sodium chicken stock as the base for the sauce with a little bit of what did I use? Oh, I put some fresh habaneros, chopped up habaneros in there, as well as the oyster or the coconut aminos, and then a dash of molasses.
Nice.
Yes. So good. You get the sweetness plus the hot of the habaneros. Oh my gosh.
You're gonna have me wanting to travel and try that.
if you can find a Thai restaurant, I recommend a local mom and pop, depending on, I don't know if you have one in your
no.
town, or if you, on your travels, look for a local Thai restaurant.
I may do that. I don't think there's one where I'm going to be seeing Scream tomorrow, but if there is, I may be willing to do that. How spicy is it, would you say?
Usually they'll ask how spicy you want it. I know the place here in town, they'll say, do you want it American, mild, medium, or hot, or Thai, mild, medium, or hot?
Gotcha. Because that's one thing, yes. I always have to keep in mind before I go and see a movie in a theater. I always make sure of usually three things. If you're going to eat something, eat it an hour before the movie starts.
Yep.
Two, I know people like to do this, but I still advise against it, especially if it's a movie you're very invested in. Don't get a soft drink while you're at the theater, because it will make you want to pee really badly, especially during important scenes. And number three, please go to the bathroom right before it starts. And if you feel like you need to go while the trailers are playing, don't do what I did when I went and saw Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings. I had to go pee the entire time, but the movie was so good, I couldn't leave.
you couldn't enjoy the movie.
I did enjoy the movie, but I had to.
But usually if I have to pee the whole time, I'm like, crap, I really have to pee. How much? I'm only 30 minutes in, crap, you know? So yeah, like your advice, I usually, and I'm going before we walk and sit down, and then I'm like, okay, trailers are about to begin. I'm going to go right now just in case.
Yep.
And then I don't even buy a soft drink or water at the theater, because for me, I would drink it all within the first 10 minutes and then have to pee. 30 minutes later.
And the popcorn, and I'm saying this as someone who used to work in a movie theater, popcorn will make your mouth very dry. So that's where the water and your need for water and soft drink and whatnot will quench your need for moisturization. And also it just leaves a mess everywhere. And I don't like seeing.
It's all geared to make you go to the concession stand and buy something to drink.
Yep. Which you'd think. Like, on the one hand, I get why they have it. And it's honestly really nice to be able to sit, eat, and drink while watching a movie. But in my experience, if you're going to drink anything while at a movie theater, let it be liquor. Because liquor, I don't remember what my friend got me for my birthday when we went to see A Quiet Place Part 2 together. I didn't need to go to the bathroom at all. I felt a bit lighter. I didn't feel drunk. I felt lighter. I just felt nice. I felt good.
Okay.
And it was a very intense, scary experience, as it should be, but I didn't feel any weird bodily problems or anything. And it wasn't like a very strong drink either. You don't want to have anything too strong to knock you out during the movie. You want to at least feel like you can relax while you're on the really comfortable chairs. So if you can do that, please do, because beer will make you want to pee, and soft drinks and water will definitely make you want to pee. So if you want to help out the concession stand and help your theater make money, and you're old enough,
don't sneak your liquor in.
Just buy their liquor if they have it. Not every theater has them, but The theater I worked in, we were one of the few theaters in Knoxville, Tennessee at the time that had alcohol, and you could get that. Hell,
wow.
You could even have, did we allow for wine? I don't know. Did we? I think maybe in like a plastic cup. I think you could like bring a bottle and do something there. I don't remember. It's been years. But we did have Blue Moon. We did have all that sort of stuff. And when I was through working at the theater, when I didn't work there anymore, the first movie I went to go see after I had finished, because I didn't want to work two jobs at the same time at that point, I went and saw Swiss Army Man. Wonderful movie, and I had a Blue Moon. I just thought, this is great. And of course, later in the movie, I needed to pee, but I couldn't leave because I was enraptured by the experience.
I am that way. I will not leave to go pee unless, you know, we still have like 45 minutes left and I'm getting ready to burst. But I will cut out right as soon as the credits roll. So if I have to miss anything, it's going to be the credits and potential end credit scene.
Which at that point, I mean, you can go after the mid credits if you're watching a Marvel movie, and then go pee, then turn around and come back for the post credit scene, because you'll have plenty of time. Like those go on for at least 3, maybe 4 minutes, probably 5 tops, because there's a lot of people that work on those movies. And I still feel this way, but when I went and saw Spider-Man No Way Home, I won't spoil it for anyone who hasn't seen it yet. But people were still leaving before the credits were wrapping up. And I'm like, okay.
Wow.
You guys have known that there's something that's going to pop up at the end, right? You know that, right? This has been going on since 2008. And you're still leaving. It happens all the time with a Marvel movie. Like, there are people that still leave. Like, you guys know there's another scene, right?
Not everybody is into the end credits, though. I know people who, when we go to the theater or when we used to, I'd be like, nope, I'm staying. They're like, but why? It's over. I'm like, no, there's usually something at the end. It's like, I don't want to wait.
Yeah, and then it could be like, you know, a relative. So there's just some people who just could either be a relative.
Nope, go ahead.
I was going to say, there's either a relative plot point, a setup for a sequel, or a setup for another movie / the larger universe as a whole.
Right. Oh, I was going to say, I will always stay for the end of a Marvel movie just to see what is at the very end.
I will too.
You know, just for that additional plot point, that little, even if it's just a little Easter egg, you know, that means nothing against the narrative. They at least filmed it and thought about it enough to include it.
Which, I mean, you got to think pretty hard about doing those because you want to.
Right.
Because there's some, like Ant-Man and the Wasp, I felt like you did not need that at all. You really did not need that. It was just an ant playing drums. That's all it was.
No.
Whereas, let's say, well, I mean, we can say Avengers. You get Thanos to pop up. Great. I lost my fucking mind when I first saw him. And then later after that, they're eating shawarma together, which I think that's great that they got to show that. Just, it's hilarious. It's a hilarious way to end the movie. And then, like, you know, like, there's the stuff with Thor the Dark World, where, like, you know, there's the one credit scene that completely reveals that, like, you know, the Infinity Stones are going to be at play. But then later on, it's like, oh, just big frost monsters running around knocking shit over. And it's like, that wasn't exactly needed. Okay. So sometimes I'm like, y'all should probably... It's nice to have some fun moments like that, but I will say Hawkeye had probably one of my most unexpected favorite credit sequences that I have seen in the MCU in a long time.
What was that? I don't want to spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen the fantastic Hawkeye. Was that the one in the last episode?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, I was expecting something, I was not expecting what I got. And
I wasn't either.
Thoroughly loved what I got.
I did too. I did too. And that's all I will say.
Yep. If you haven't seen Hawkeye, check it out. It's probably one of the better Disney Plus MCU installments.
Yes, it really, really is. And I want to mention one last thing before we bounce. Probably by the time this episode comes out, the Book of Boba Fett will wrap up, and I cannot get that theme song out of my head. I really cannot. It won't leave.
I'm still watching it. I'm still watching the Book of Boba Fett. I'm still trying to get into it.
Okay.
I'll be honest. I'm not opposed to it. I've never been really a big Star Wars fan. I watched all the Mandalorian, and I'm just watching Boba Fett. I'm just kind of seeing like where they're going to go, how they're expanding the universe. I like how it's not the main Star Wars characters. It's the other side characters, you know, that aren't as big but are as popular.
Yeah, I agree. I'm digging it for a multitude of reasons. But it would be a very long conversation at that point. And I feel like it would be best had probably after the show is over with, so we know where it's all leading up to and all that and all that good stuff. But Ludwig, who I cannot pronounce his last name, I've loved all of the music he's composed, and Joe Shirley, who's been doing like the main score stuff for the Book of Boba Fett. Gotcha. I'm a sucker for Star Wars music, whether it's John Williams or those two guys.
Okay.
I'm a sucker for it. And
I could see, I mean, the scores are pretty iconic.
So if you randomly just see me walk around going, bum, ba dum, bum, ba dum, bum, 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 bum. Bum ba dum bum ba dum bum bum ba bum. That's just me obsessing over the theme song for the Book of Boba Fett. And
that's all good.
No one says Tatooine like Tamara Morrison. He just says Tatooine.
Yes,
that's true. I remembered hearing him say it like that in the Star Wars Bounty Hunter video game back in 2002. And I played the shit out of that game when I was younger. So hearing him say it in The Mandalorian and Book of Boba Fett, just saying Tatooine, the way he said it back then, that made me as happy as finding out that Jaster Muriel was canon with that chain code that the fans translated in that Mandalorian episode. I was like, no fucking way. You what? Oh, but that's me being all excited and such for that. So
that's cool.
Thank you. So now that I've gotten that out of my system and everything else, and I need to go eat some ribs that are in the oven, my good sir, Kevin, thank you so much for being on the show. It has been an absolute blast having you on here. And to put it lightly, this was fantastic.
Thank you for having me.
I had to. So where can the listeners of Voices That Cook follow you, my friend?
They can actually follow me at, I've got a couple different websites or a couple different social medias. My Twitter is A Voice Ahead. I also am starting a new venture that they can follow me on Instagram and Twitter. Instagram, it's Beans Organic Bakery.
Beans Organic?
To where I'm, that's the bakery to where all my delicious organic, all my treats are organic, healthy, try to get locally sourced if I can, but very few ingredients. So Beans Organic Bakery on Instagram and Twitter as well.
Nice. Please do be sure to follow those. I will have those in the description along with all of the videos we have mentioned and all that good stuff. And if you wish to follow me, you can also follow me on Twitter at Voice That Cooks and on Instagram at The Voice That Cooks. And if you want to see everything that's on my website currently, including my character demo, my bio, my resume, if you want to shoot me an email out in there in the little website and such, you can go to williamnunvo.com. And I have no idea if I plugged my website in the previous episode, so in case I didn't, I did it here, so I feel happy that I did that. But rest assured, I hope all of you out there who have been listening have not only been enjoying the show, I hope that your stomachs were growling during it, because there are times where I think to myself, should I put a disclaimer saying, like, warning, don't listen to this on an empty stomach, but it might just make you want to make food that we have talked about. And if you decided, thanks to our conversation, that you wanted to make food that we talked about, then do let us see it. We'd love to see it and see what you've created. And if there's any other foods where you're like, yeah, I'd love to show you this, there you go. That'd put a smile on my face.
We all love delicious food.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. But seriously, though, thank you all so much for listening. And if you're listening to this on a podcast app that lets you review the show, please do leave us a review and let us know what you think of the show so far. And also, please, of course, do follow Kevin, who I will say once again, thank you so much for being on the show, good sir. You're welcome.
Thank you,
sir.
You're welcome. And it was a pleasure. Thank you.
Everyone out there, whether you're watching Book of Boba Fett or not, or if you're watching Dune or not, or whatever, just have yourselves a wonderful rest of your day. And thank you for listening to Voices That Cook.